Hi, it's Kim here. I want to personally invite you to join me under the wide open Wyoming skies to capture breathtaking images in one of the West's most beautiful settings, the Powderhorn Ranch. For the past 13 years, my co-host Corinne Sheppers of the Equine Photographers Network and I have hosted the Powderhorn Women's Photography Retreat, and each year has been so special and unique. The horses and the accommodations at the Powderhorn are both 5-star. You'll make new friends, enjoy unforgettable experiences, and have plenty of time and space to be creative with your camera. This is a getaway you will always treasure. The dates for 2025 are October 2nd through 6th. The cost is $2,995, and that includes shared room, meals, and model releases. If you're hearing this, we still have spots available. Email me personally at kim@cowgirlswithcameras.com with your questions or to request a registration form. That's kim@cowgirlswithcameras.com. I hope to see you in Wyoming.
It's time to laugh, learn, and take your photography to the next level with your favorite Cowgirls with Cameras, Kara, Kim, and Phyllis.
Welcome to the Cowgirls with Cameras podcast. I'm Kim with Kim Beer Photography and Be More Business.
I'm Kara with Fast Horse Photography.
And I'm Phyllis with Phyllis Brichette Photo. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, everybody. Long time no see.
I know. I'm excited. We're doing a part two.
We are doing a part two. So, yay. Yes, we're actually recording on the same day. But does anybody have any life updates that they would like to share before we dive into our topic today? Kara has some things she's got going on this afternoon. I don't know about Phyllis, but all I got planned for this afternoon is work.
Well, we're getting ready to go to Cottonwood. That's probably the biggest thing on my mind right at this exact moment. Like getting all the stuff boxed up to be shipped out there and getting my camera gear figured out, and which that isn't too difficult to figure out, but getting my kids' schedule figured out so I can be gone. Yeah, getting excited about that and emailing with all the photographers who are excited.
Yes. Yes. We've already had our meet and greet for that one. And it was fun. And it's a great group of people. I am super excited about it. And about this time you're listening to the episode, we will be, I think, at Cottonwood. So we'll be out enjoying. So Noah, as you're listening to this, we are probably either teaching a class, working on editing, or out doing what we love, shooting beautiful horses in a great scenery. So yay. And we'll have dates for the 2026 version of Cottonwood, hopefully, by the time we talk to y'all next.
That's right. Phyllis, anything you want to add? You're awful quiet.
I haven't done anything exciting since I recorded the last episode.
You didn't take your dog out to go potty or something in the last 2 minutes?
Nope.
Anyway, we're batch recording today because we're going to be on the road.
Yes, we are batch recording because we're going to be on the road. And we are excited to be at Cottonwood. And yes, I'm sure none of us have done anything all that thrilling in the last 5 minutes since we recorded the last episode, and now are on to this one. So
I feel like this is like a really dreary behind the scenes, like what it's really like being a podcaster.
Yes.
Cowgirls with Cameras.
Yes, this is exactly what it's like to be in podcasting, is the batching of the episodes. So I think we can utilize that time to maybe dive right into the topic right away. What do you guys
think? Let's do it.
Let's do it. So today we're wanting to talk a little bit more about modeling, which is our theme for August, is working with models as a photographer. And on today's episode, we're talking about best practices when you're working with models. I'm going to talk about finding models. Like, where do you find these very unicorn-like creatures that you can photograph? And then Kara is going to talk about setting expectations with your models. Phyllis is going to bring us up with all of the stuff that is definitely probably a little more on the boring side. Thank you for taking that load off of our plates, Phyllis.
Thank you, Phyllis.
But is absolutely the necessary part of this process, which is the contracts and agreements part of it. So yeah, the part that I sometimes get a little bit sidetracked on, especially early in my career, I was not always that great with the paperwork. So where do you find models? So many of the models I found at horse shows. I'm going to be flat honest. I was an official photographer and I made friends. And I started doing farm calls and things like that. And once I got to a farm, I met other people at the farm. And in general, I just started to build a really good network of people that I could call on as models, or if I needed something specific, that I could reach out to them and say, hey, can I photograph you, you know, riding your horse with this particular product or whatever I needed. In my commercial photography work, I relied heavily on my client book from when I was did portrait work and horse shows in order to find the people that I needed to work with. Now, chances are a lot of you have access to people with horses. I know a lot of equine photographers have horses, but it's also not a prerequisite to be an equine photographer to have horses or have had a horse. So you may not have that network, which means that you need to work on that a little bit. I encourage you to find equestrian groups that you can join and be part of. If you have an interest in doing horse show work, you know, horse shows are a great place to meet people. Even if you're not going to do it long term and it's not your favorite love, if you have the equipment and the knowledge and are willing to do it, it's a great place to both earn clients and to meet models. You can also, as long as you do not interfere with the official photographer, please, as an official past official photographer, please do not go interfere with the official photographer. But if you are looking for models, go network at a horse show. They generally have social areas. Almost every performance horse show, and Phyllis has done way more horse showing than I've done, even photographing of horse showing, there's usually some type of a hospitality area at the horse show. And that is a great place to meet people. Wouldn't you say, Phyllis?
Well, I usually already know those people, but yeah.
If you were totally new at this, though, like if you were, if you didn't have a horse and you were wanting to meet people in a specific equine genre, I know the horse shows that I photographed on, there's usually some place that they have donuts and some water. And that is a really good place to just kind of plant yourself and meet people. Again, please be considerate of the official photographer. They're there, and trust me on this, there's not a great margin in horse show photography, so don't step on their toes. Beyond horse shows, there are other ways that you can reach people. Online, we have the internet now, and I am constantly reminded how old I am because of how I met people before. So if you don't want the donut stand at the horse show, you can join equestrian groups on Facebook and look at what who posts where. There's communities of equestrians. There's associations of equestrians. So there's a lot of different places that you can go to be able to, Kara just typed in our notes, socially stalk equestrians. Like follow their, didn't we decide to change that to social shadowing? So
that's what it was. That's what it was.
Yeah. So yeah. Socially shadow equestrians that you might, that have the look or horse or particular discipline that you're interested in finding models in.
And go look at their friends, because those might be horse people you need to know.
Yes. And what's fun is horse people know other horse people. So yeah. That old cliche of birds of a feather flock together, that's a great way to meet people. Because when you work with one model, you can say, hey, you know what? This was kind of fun. Did you enjoy it? And when they say yes, because they always say yes, because equine photographers are the best to work with, then you can say, do you have any friends that might be interested in doing this? And I can tell you usually walk away with at least two or three names. You can also put out calls into the world. Like if you know of a barn that is in the discipline and kind of fits what you're really needing to do, which is also a big part of this finding models, you really need to know what you want. It's much harder to go out in the world to say, I just want a model to pose for me while I photograph, versus going, I am looking specifically for a performance horse rider in the reining discipline who has solid color quarter horses. You know, if you know what you really want to shoot, you can find that a whole lot easier. And if you listen to the last episode that we recorded, we kind of gave you some ideas on how to suss out what that might be for any specific purpose. Also, you know, be prepared. Most of us who work with models, and when we find models, they're not professional models. Like, this is not what they've done for a living for their whole life. Occasionally, and I've stumbled across this a couple of times, occasionally I have stumbled across a professional model who rides a horse. Actually, I had a girl that came and modeled for me that is an equine dentist. So that was rather interesting. Sometimes you do find them, but they're rare. And so you have to be prepared to train them and set really clear expectations. And those expectations need to be set from the get-go in your model call. So I'm curious, for the two of you, how have you gone about putting out model calls?
I've done it several ways. I worked really hard to connect with my local horse organizations and did model calls through the horse organization. I learned my lesson. I did a model call the first time and I didn't have a lot of things that I was real specific about. And also I didn't set expectations well, which is what I'm about to talk about in a minute, but I was burned. And then the second time I made sure that there were lots of hoops to jump through because there was a huge response to the model call and it was more than I could manage. And so I had to put a couple, what is that called when you put some hurdles in place to kind of really suss out who was really interested and who.
Restrictions,
but also you've got to do this and then I need
qualifications.
You to do this. Qualifying. I really needed to qualify. So that's how I found models originally. And then it really came down to making client connections. You know, Phyllis has done, she says, a lot of my models were clients and they were people that I know I could work with. I liked their horse, honestly, horse behavior is a huge part of it. Their horse behaved really well and was easy to work with. Boom, you're a good to go model for me.
Your horse puts its ears up and looks happy. Boy, am I all over that.
Somewhat stands quietly, for something. Yeah. So it doesn't take a lot.
What about you, Phyllis? Do you put out model calls?
I have never done a model call because that part, what she said to begin with, when you get an enormous amount of people responding to it, scares me. And I don't know how to say no. I'm better off to just pick and choose. I have enough people I know. I'm good. No, I don't do model calls.
You also had the interesting aspect of coming from the equine industry. So you already knew people who had horses that you could call upon to work with. And that was me as well. I had that. And then once I started working as a commercial photographer, then of course the clients of the business that I was working for became the models of what we called for. I have done a general model call on Facebook. And I made the same mistake Kara did the first time I did it. I kind of put out something that was really general without a lot of qualifications. And I ended up with a lot of people that were not a good fit for what I needed.
No, they were a lot of people that were just looking for a free photo shoot and were more about showing up how they wanted to show up and less about showing up like you needed them to show up. Or some didn't show up at all. So
yes. And this is the whole thing about this particular part of finding models is once you get over that hurdle of finding the first few, then it becomes a beautiful snowball effect where they'll introduce you to other people who are really like-minded and that you build a really good relationship with your models. That said, I do want to make a statement of finding models that are unique for you versus poaching other photographers' models. That is, I don't think, an industry best practice, in my opinion. If you have a model come to your call that's worked it for other photographers, that's okay. But I don't appreciate the practice of when I work with a model, if other photographers see that model and then they're out asking that model to come model for them. Be conscientious and use the golden rule here of do unto others as you would like them to have to do unto you. So anybody have a comment about that? Am I kind of alone in that piece of advice as a best practice?
Well, it's tricky because you've got people out there that they are so willing to be photographed and so just easy to work with and happy to do it. And then they want to do that with other photographers too. I mean, that's what models are literally paid to do, is work with photographer after photographer after photographer.
And sometimes it's not that they're being poached, that they're actually asking other photographers.
Right.
And I agree with that one. The one I don't agree with is seeing, let's say that I saw Kara worked with a specific model that she utilizes a lot, and then I call that model and
yeah,
form a similar shoot with them.
I wouldn't do that unless I asked Kara. I would ask Kara first. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very tricky.
Exactly.
Because unfortunately for me, I have had people that have been good models that I had to just kind of not work with as often because they're being overshot with other photographers. And I just kind of, I need to have, like you said, original people and unique people and people that are, so it's not, I don't want to like punish them, but I have to like be selective and kind of think outside of the box with that. And I have definitely moved on from some models because they have been just photographed by a lot of people locally. So yeah. It is what it is, you know, tricky.
It's part of the experience. It is tricky.
Yeah.
But I do think let's keep our equine photography community friendly. And
yeah,
if you really want to work with that model and they have the perfect look and you see that they're working with another photographer a lot, reach out to that photographer. I think that's a very fair way to approach that. And it's just nice for that we have a really nice part of the photography industry where we are a little more willing to work with each other and then in some places. Let's keep it that way. Let's stay friendly. I'm all for that.
Me too.
All right, Kara, are you ready to talk about setting those clear expectations with your models?
Yes. So on the last episode, we started talking a little bit about setting expectation for models. But the one thing we did mention was most of the time we are not working with professionally trained models. I think it was Phyllis that said she's had the option of doing that, or maybe Kim had said they had the option of doing that. But most of the people that I've worked with are just regular horse people, and they're easy to work with or not so easy to work with because they've never done it before. But they're just regular horse people that have beautiful horses that I want to photograph. So they don't know what they're doing sometimes. So we have to really set expectations. So I broke this into three parts. Before the model session is where I want to start. So being super clear with your communication is huge. Let them know upfront that this is a collaboration. It's not a full client session. Be really clear on what they'll receive, if anything, in return. An example for me might be a few images or social media sized watermark files or even payment of some kind. A lot of times when I'm working with models for brand projects, I write in a model fee into the invoice for my branding client. I also will make sure that they know they're not getting a full gallery of images. They're going to get what I can give them, if anything, from that shoot that my client allows me to give or that I'm comfortable with giving. And then I'm going to be really upfront with them on where those images are going and how they're going to be used. If they're used for stock, I'm going to let them know that they're going to be used for stock. If they're going to be online somewhere or in print, I need to be clear with them on what that is so that they can let me know before we go through that session, before we go do all the work, that they're okay with that. They also will be told that they're going to sign a model release, and I make sure they have all that information. So I also like to define the time commitment. So I try to be really honest with them about what it's going to look like. I've learned over the years when I'm shooting tack sets, for example, and I need models, like how long you think a tack set's going to take 2 seconds to photograph, and then you realize that it isn't fitted, you need to punch a hole, you've got to make changes to the tack, or something doesn't fit. And a single set of tack can take so much longer than you think that it should. So how many pieces can you shoot in a day or during that time period? We're going to try to be as realistic as possible about that. And it's not just about shooting time. Like, what do I expect them to do to prepare from before I even get there in terms of grooming, in terms of having tack cleaned and ready to go, or gaining access to locations that we want to use for the shoot? I also like to really be clear about wardrobe and grooming. And I don't just mean horse grooming. I mean human grooming as well. You know, really being clear on what, you know, wearing neutral colors or no distracting logos or having a timeless style that can be used, you know, for a longer period of time. Things like Kim mentioned in our last episode, checking for nail polish. That seems like such a small thing, but I guarantee when you get back to the editing platform of your choice, you are not going to want to have to clean up fingernails. So,
nope.
You know, the biggest mistakes I make sometimes, not having them wash their hands before we get started, you know, like little things like that can make such a big difference. So just giving them an idea of how they can prepare for you is huge. And then I always talk about comfort and safety. make the type of images and the things that you will ask them to do around their horse, like talk to them about what that's going to look like. I like to know, I'm going to say to them, I'm going to have you bridle or unbridle your horse. I'm going to have you mount your horse. I'm going to have you walk your horse. Are you comfortable cantering your horse? Like, we'll have conversations like that in advance before I hire them if I know that I need certain things. A great example is I had to photograph, is it called a surcingle?
Yeah,
that's what I call it.
Okay, I always worry I'm not saying it right. I had to photograph a surcingle and I've never used one before, ever. But I had to photograph one in action on a horse being used for training. So I had to find a model that had used one before and knew what I was talking about and had a horse that they could use the long lines from on the ground and could work that horse. So, you know, really talking to them about that and not just showing up randomly with stuff and expecting it to work for their horse is huge. So it's not just about the people, it's about what that horse is going to tolerate. Okay. The next section I want to talk about is moving into during the model session itself. So you want to talk about how that shoot's going to flow in general. So walk them through your game plan so they aren't guessing what's expected of them. For example, I might say something like, okay, we're going to start with grooming shots, and then we're going to move to tacking up shots, and then we're going to move to under saddle shots, and then we're going to finish with some real casual round the barn scenes with you untacking and maybe doing a hose down or something like that. So we'll walk through that step by step, including in there probably when we'll make look changes and that sort of thing. I also like to set behavior boundaries really early on. So if the horse is acting up or my model feels really nervous or seems like she's nervous, you know, I'm going to try to make sure that I've got time in there to take breaks as needed. I think this really just sets the tone and really makes you as the photographer help your model understand that you're trying to prioritize their horse and the horse's mental state and well-being over getting the shot. With that being said, I've made mistakes and I've hired model and horse pairs that have just not been a good fit for what I've needed. And they've been really hard to work with. And I've had to wrap that shoot up and move on and find somebody else that could do it. And that's really, really hard to have to do that. And then encourage natural interaction. You know, Kim talked last time about trying to give like a lot of direction about what you need. I think that's really important, but I also like to leave room for equestrians to be kind of as natural and authentic as they can with their horse. Things like how they would scratch their horse's neck or if their horse is interacting with them in some way. How can we photograph that as well and make that work? So trying not to be super overposing with my clients if I don't have to be. And then really explain posing guidance then in the next step. So if they don't know how to pose, reassure them that you will help them. Like you've done the work and you know how to direct them as needed. So they don't need to know how to pose. And I think that just really helps build confidence in them. It builds confidence and trust in your relationship. And it's going to help avoid some of that like really awkward body language that Kim mentioned in our last episode. I also want to talk about then the next step, which would be after the model session around setting expectations. Be honest about the timeline. This will get you in trouble if you're not. So be really clear about when they can expect to be paid or compensated, however you're going to be compensating them. If it's with images, be clear about when they can see the images and when they can use the images. I did a shoot recently that was for a magazine, and I had to tell them that they would not see the images until they came in the magazine because I couldn't risk those being released somewhere out in the world until then. So be really clear about what that's going to look like for them after the fact. You know, remind them that what the images are going to be for in terms of your portfolio or your marketing or any other use that they're going to be out there for. And I know Phyllis talked a lot about social media etiquette in our last episode. So if you have expectations around social media and how and when those images should be used, you need to be clear with them. And I highly recommend putting it in writing somewhere so they can refer back to it, or so you can refer back to it to remind them of the expectation if a situation comes up. Once again, let them know if they're going to be tagged or no tagging or any sharing that they're doing, just how that can be done. You just do not want to be in an awkward situation. Since I like to leave tips, I'm going to leave this section with just a couple little tips to make everything go really smooth. Once again, put everything in writing. I think Phyllis is going to tell you how to do that. Over communicate rather than assume. Just remember, most equestrians have never been models before. So their first toe dipping into the experience is with you. So try to make it as professional as you can and as an awesome experience as you can for them. So they want to work with you again down the line. And be respectful, like be nice. You know, you're really grateful that these people are lending their time to you and lending their horse to you. And in all weather conditions, they're willing to do this for you. And that's a really big deal. It's not just a you situation all the time. So make sure they feel valued and appreciated in any way that you can in that process. That's it. That's all I have.
Thank you, Kara.
You're welcome.
I get the fun part.
Yes.
I get the fun part that nobody really wants to talk about. Payment. Payment and post-shoot support and agreements with your models.
That's right.
How fun is that?
It's an important part, Phyllis.
Okay. So we have what they call TFP, which is time for photos versus paid models. I think it's important to know when you should pay for models. I think the TFP time in exchange for photos is great for mutual portfolio building, but it's not always appropriate. If you may want to pay your model if you're using the images commercially, if you're reselling prints, or you're asking for very specific poses, wardrobe, or travel, especially. The TFP model time, exchanging time for photos works well when both parties are gaining exposure or you're doing artistic work from the shoot. So keep that in mind that we're not always asking for people to do this for free. Sometimes we do pay for it. Agreements to me are especially important. In your agreements, you want to cover the compensation details, the hourly rate or trade or images or plus the portfolio rights. Even for a TFP shoot, written agreements are essential, I feel. Having everything clear and in writing is so important. It protects both you and your model but the client or whoever you're shooting with, the model that's helping you with the shoot. Your agreement should always include a model release, which grants you and your client permission to use the images for specific purposes, like web, print, or social media, or for ads. It details the specific image use. It spells out the duration. Is this perpetual versus limited term? And I think that all this is very important to be sure your model release covers all this. In your own personal agreement, you should have your turnaround time for edited images, how many final images the model will receive, what format they'll be in, and when will she will they receive them? What is the time frame that they can expect to receive them? I would even cover cancellation and rescheduling terms because you're going to have people cancel.
Yep.
Any restrictions? This is a big one for me. This is where I got kind of hurt before. Any restrictions on editing, posting, or altering the images? I have restrictions on all that.
Yeah.
I had a model that entered a contest with my images. I would even put that in the contest, even if entering contests with photographers' images is allowed. Yes or no? This is another big one. Can that model license the same images elsewhere? Of course not. No. Cover that in writing. I'm sorry. This is just, these are all big ones. These are all catches for me.
But they're all like things that happen.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They did happen. They're catches for me.
Right. That's what's so scary about it is they're things that actually happen.
Yeah.
Always clarify who owns the copyright. You do. You own the copyright as the photographer. Clarify that in writing. Who holds image usage rights? You do. Or in this case, the client and the model will obviously own some usage rights, but they don't own the copyright. Define exclusivity. Can the model license the same images somewhere else? Well, I already kind of said that. No. No. Clarify where and how the images are going to be used, whether the model can post them, and if credit is required. Cover every bit of this in writing. That's before you ever get to the shoot. That should be covered before they had read and signed and understood before you ever do the shoot. I'm going to cover after the shoot. Wow. Just follow through with everything you promised promptly in the time frame that you promised in your agreement. Always keep communication and communicate, but keep it professional and very clear. Offer guidance on how and when to post. And I would say a big one, like Kara kind of mentioned, is nurture those ongoing relationships. Great models make your job easier, and they're hard to find, ones that you really work well with and enjoy working with. If you find somebody you work well with, tag and credit them consistently. Offer first access to your future products if they work for that project. I might recommend them to other photographers. That's up to you whether or not you want to do that. Maybe talk about that with them, about recommending them to other photographers. So that's pretty much all I got.
I
was kind of on my high horse about the agreement. So,
well, I got to say, like, I feel pretty lucky to have such a great community here of models mm-hmm. and people that I can call on. And one of the things that I have done that has been pretty successful, and I don't use Facebook like I used to, but I actually created, and it worked really well when I needed models more frequently. I had a Facebook group that was a private Facebook group that was just for Fast Horse models. And that's where I would drop model requests first and gave them first dibs on things that were coming up. And I would be real specific about what I needed. And a lot of times, if it wasn't someone that was already in my model pool, they knew somebody that would be a good fit. And they could talk to that person about what it was like to work with me already. So it kind of felt like they had information already. But that's something to consider as well, as creating like a private space for your models if you work with models a lot. Just another way to nurture those people. I don't know. I feel like I've been really lucky to have such great models over the years. But part of that, I think, comes down to doing this prep work that we've talked about today.
It does. And having to get in writing.
Yeah. Most of the time, I usually give them a little more. I give them more than I promise.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to keep using them if I can. If that's somebody I really wanted to work with, I want to trade them right.
Yeah.
I also want to let you guys know, if you're a little bit lost on how to do some of these things and you are looking for an opportunity to maybe get some experience about how to direct models, how working with models, improving your portfolio with some things, join us at an event. Come to a Cowgirls with Cameras event, because all of the things that we talked about in the previous episode, there's opportunity there for that, because we do provide, guess what, model releases with our events. So you do get a photograph that is released for a release from that model, so you can use the photography in stock in your portfolio and your spec work. And if particularly if it has anything to do with branding that would be specific, it's a great opportunity for you to kind of dip your toe into learning how to direct, how to set up scenes. And we're there, and we're generally available to answer questions at most of our events. And some of them are set up around teaching, like Cottonwood, which is set up to be learning intensive. So it's a good opportunity for you if you're new to this, or if you're shy about working with models, it's a great opportunity for you to get your feet wet with it a little bit. I've had a lot of wet feet metaphors in this last two episodes.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with
you. Dipping your toe in, like I it's on my mind because I have a horse who's wearing a boot and it's wet and it, yeah. So I don't know. Sorry for all of the foot metaphors, but anyway.
Well, my farrier's coming tomorrow, too. So
mine's
there you go.
On Friday.
Just foot their metaphors everywhere. Everywhere.
Well, we hope you guys have enjoyed these last two episodes this month on working with models and just some of the do's and don'ts of that and all the reasons why you might want to work with them. This has been a good episode, and we hope that if you want more information, you will join us online. We are at cowgirlswithcameras.com, where you can see all the ways that you can join us out in the world. We are also, we have a private Cowgirls with Cameras community, very exclusive, very hip, very cool. If you go there, it's cowgirlswithcameras.community. Highly recommend you check that out. We're also on social media at Facebook and Instagram at Cowgirls with Cameras. So there's lots of ways that you can interact with us. And honestly, we would love for you to do more of that. So come say hi.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cowgirls with Cameras. Don't let the laughter and learning stop here. Join our community on social media and be sure to visit our website for more opportunities to fulfill your photography goals. Head to cowgirlswithcameras.com. That's cowgirlswithcameras.com. See you next time.